Aloha. It's 4 o'clock, and you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. Time now for Out of the Box. I'm your host, Dave Giroux. Jonathan Jay is still off-island. I believe he's in Italy now. Should be back in a couple of shows from now. So, just me flying solo in the studio today. And before I get started, I need to tell you that Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these following underwriters.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic, acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, electromagnetic cellular therapy, and spinal rehab. Most major health insurance plans in Medicare accepted. Open Monday through Friday, 332-5580 or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide. A proud sponsor of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
Announcing the Healing the Healers Retreat, August 31st through September 5th at Dolphin Touch Wellness Center in Kapaa. During the six-day retreat, you will receive daily healing sessions, healthy meals, daily body movement exercises, nature hikes, meditations, and crystal bowl ceremonies. Clear your energy, embrace abundance, and open your heart. A Lemuria Remembered retreat will be held on the first week of November. Personal healing journey retreats are also available. More information online at dolphintouch.org or by calling Jeannie at 822-4414.
Dove presents an intimate solo acoustic performance by Citizen Cope, Wednesday, August 13th at 8 p.m. at the Church of the Pacific in Princeville. All ages welcome. That's Citizen Cope, one night only, Wednesday, August 13th at the Church of the Pacific. More information online at dovepresents.com or by calling 635-5556.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Okay, mahalo to those folks for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and also thanks to Ben for a great show there. I guess he's new to the time slot there. He's doing a good job. Okay, well, let's see. I guess the first topic I want to cover today, on top of everybody's mind, is Hurricane Iselle. I've been kind of watching it over the last few days here, and it looks like it's Kauai's forecast is improving over the next few days there, where we're supposed to get some rain and maybe some light winds, but it's not going to be as bad as they thought it was going to be anyway. But things can change, so I don't want to stop you from making any preparations whatsoever here. But according to the University of Hawaii Weather Server, and this is where I get a lot of my weather news from, you just go to UH Weather Server, and it'll get you right to it. You got satellite photos of what's going on. And I guess the Iselle is just about to hit the Big Island. And it's probably within hours, if it hasn't already started there. Anyway, they're going to get it soon. But it's really not going to be good news for Hilo, because I don't know if you've been to Hilo lately. Hilo's got a lot of kind of substandard housing, I would say. And Kauai doesn't really have that much, because the last hurricane wiped all the shanties out. But Hilo's still got them. They haven't had a hurricane in Hilo in recorded history, as far as I know. And so they've got a lot of kind of rough housing and tin roofs, single wall buildings. A lot of that could really have a problem here over the next few hours, I think. So they might be getting some urban renewal there, but I don't want to make light of what is happening there. I just hope everybody is safe. But anyway, on Kauai now, the storm track is now saying it will miss Kauai completely. We won't even get tropical storm conditions, although, you know, it's still possible. Things can change. And who knows what's going to happen when it hits the big island. You know, it could just fall apart when it hits those big mountains, or, you know, could strengthen as it goes down the backside. I don't know. But we don't really have much history on that here because it's been a long, long time since anyone's hit there, any hurricanes have hit there. But anyway, today on Kauai, according to the UH Weather Server, partly sunny with scattered showers, breezy, locally heavy rainfall possible. Northeast winds 20 to 25, chance of rain 50%. Tonight, tropical storm conditions possible. Cloudy, frequent showers in the evening, then frequent showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Windy, locally heavy rainfall possible. Winds 25 to 30 mile per hour with gusts to 40. Chance of rain 80%. Friday, tropical storm conditions possible. Cloudy with frequent showers and thunderstorms. Breezy, locally heavy rainfall possible. Winds 20 to 25 with gusts up to 40. Chance of rain 80%. And then kind of letting off by Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday, we have Sunday night, we have another storm system coming through Julio, which is supposed to track north of the islands now. We're out of the tropical storm track of that storm as well. One will be going south, one will be going north, but again, things change, so keep an eye on the weather. So that might be hitting us Sunday night. And so they're saying Sunday will be partly sunny with locally heavy rainfalls here and there. And then Sunday night, tropical storm conditions possible, mostly cloudy, numerous showers in the evening, scattered showers after midnight, winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. So we're really going to be spared the big winds, it seems like, which are the most damaging. We handle our weather, the rain here pretty well, but it looks like we're also going to be spared the wind conditions here that Hilo is going to be getting, for example, today. I think they're talking about maybe 90, 95 miles an hour winds hitting Hilo here in the next few hours. So, but that should be about it for the storm. After that, it'll be a tropical storm and shouldn't really affect the other islands as much, except for heavy rains. So that's what I'm seeing in my weather server here. If anybody's got any information that they want to pass along regarding the storm, regarding preparations for it, seems like people here are pretty quick to make the preparations when anything is on the horizon. There's a storm within 1,000 miles. There's a threat of a shipping strike, whatever it is that they're, you know, the lines, you know, at Costco and the other stores immediately form. The water gets wiped out. The gas station lines form right away. I know yesterday in Kilauea, hour-long gas lines coming out all the way to the highway, blocking traffic on the highway. I'm sure it was the same throughout the island here. So if anybody has any observations, any information that they want to put forth to the island here, give me a call in the studio, 826-7771, and we'll get you on the air. We'll try to get through this all together. But hopefully it's not going to be as bad as they thought it was going to be even just a few days ago. So, you know, the highest wind forecasts we're getting right now are 30, 35 miles an hour. So seems like most people can handle that. That's not a really big deal for us, but you know, they may be getting it worse in other parts of the island chain here. Anyway, and then Hurricane Julio, about 2 days behind it, kind of the same situation. It's still a hurricane with 100 plus mile per hour winds, but it is weakening. It should be a tropical storm here pretty soon, within the next day or two, and will pass north of the islands and just cause a lot of rain for the most part. Not much wind through most of Hawaii. So it looks like hopefully we will have dodged that bullet anyway. But it does seem like Hilo will be quite heavily affected here by Acel. So good luck to those folks over here, over there. Okay, let's see. I've got just a couple of announcements here to make. Then we're going to get on with the show. Here's a few cancellations going on. Samuel Mahalona Memorial Hospital Volunteer Recognition Luau, scheduled for Friday, has been canceled. Living Treasures at Kauai Museum has been postponed. Jim Saylor of the Naawiliwe Yacht Club says the race today is canceled. No racing in the harbor today. Bond Dance, scheduled for Friday and Saturday at the Waimea Shingong Mission, has been canceled. Garden Island Canoe Racing Association has canceled the Napali Challenge, scheduled for Saturday. The Luhui Sunshine Market will not be held on Friday. The market will resume its usual time on next Friday at Vedina Stadium parking lot. Let's see. 2014 Moonlight and Music was totally sold out, but it has been rescheduled for Saturday, September 13th. All guests who have already purchased tables or tickets, give a call in, and whoever you bought your tickets from, I guess. Let's see. The Artist Fair at Kapa Beach Park, August 9th, has been canceled. No new date has been scheduled. Bottle redemption centers are all closed. And let's see, that's about it. Hawaii Gas advising its propane tank and cylinder customers not to shut off their gas supply unless notified to evacuate their premises by local authorities. If you are ordered to evacuate and must shut off your gas, only a trained Hawaii Gas employee can turn it back on again. If you have any questions, call Hawaii Gas, 245-3301. Okay, well, that's it for the storm for the time being. I'll check the weather and any announcements during the show, and I'll get them on as soon as possible. Okay, let's see. In a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with Tim Bynum. He'll be calling into the show here and discussing the property tax issue that's been going along. As many of you may be aware, the council recently, they repealed the permanent home use tax credit, which capped rises in property taxes to 2% back in 2006, but it has been repealed, and now you're being charged your taxes, property taxes, based on the appraised value, minus, you know, your home exemption and your age exemption if you qualify. But a lot of people were very surprised when they got their bill this year when it jumped up several thousand dollars in many cases, tens of thousands in some cases. And so that kind of got people's attention and are wondering what's going on over there. So hopefully we'll get some information from Tim Bynum on that issue. Okay, well, Tim is on the line here. He must have heard me talking about him here. And so let's go to Councilman Tim Bynum. Tim, are you there? Hello, Tim, are you there?
Yep, I am.
Okay, there we go. We got you all set up there. How are you doing today?
I'm a little tired, but other than that, I'm okay.
Tired? What, you been spending a lot of time preparing for the hurricane or what?
Oh, working and being aware of what's happening, so
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just working on various issues. So.
Well, good. I'm hoping that we'll miss the brunt of the storm here, is what the weather servers are telling us now, so hopefully it won't be too bad here.
That's the hope, and people will have no problems or safety concerns when it's time to vote. So.
That's right. So let's talk about the vote. So the primary election is Tuesday, is that right?
No, the primary election is Saturday.
Saturday. Oh, okay.
Right? In 2 days, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't been paying attention there. I know the early voting ended today, right?
At 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. So
it just ended.
Yeah. Okay.
But as far as I know, the polls will be open as planned on Saturday. Let's hope that it's easy for folks to vote.
Okay. Great. All right, so then I don't know if you heard my introduction here. Anyway, we talked a little bit about the...
Are we on the air now?
Excuse me?
Are we on the air right now?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Okay, so I just mentioned that the permanent home use tax credit was repealed recently, which capped the rises in property taxes at 2%, and so now it reset to the current valuation of the house minus whatever home dedication and age discounts you might be getting. So some people were kind of surprised that their bill went up quite a bit this year. So maybe you can tell us what happened there.
Okay. So I'm very concerned about residents whose homes were assessed in the wrong class. We've been going through and also for residents that the previous 2% cap caused a large increase. I've been concerned about this since 2008, and I've put statements in the newspaper today, and I read them at council and put it in the public record yesterday on my perspective on, you know, my statement on this situation that's arrived. I don't want to really direct people to that. They can find it at timbynum.com. Because the newspaper, if you read the newspaper over the last few days, I think all of the council members are concerned that an accurate story go out. And we have a public record, and that public record shows that this was discussed at length during our budget and at length many times since 2008. And the statement I puts out a list of things that I've tried to do and positions I've taken. I think it's fact-based. Basically, that story to me is that in 2008, Mayor Baptiste identified really big problems with the 2% cap as it was implemented in terms of fairness, in that it was based on evaluations in 2003 that had very little credibility in reality. And so where you got capped, some neighborhoods extremely low where people were paying taxes of $25 or $75 a year, and they were capped at that, while other neighborhoods got capped at a much higher rate because they'd recently been reevaluated. And the cap protected a lot of residents, and it made it predictable. And some of them were paying extremely low taxes for years, and that, but it happened at the expense of other taxpayers who were paying much higher taxes. So Mayor Baptiste's proposal was, look, let's lower property taxes for the residents really low and eliminate the cap, but we'll have put the taxes so low that the cap will, you know, and then we can decide, we can reinstate it or do whatever we want, but it's not fair the way it is now. And he had a proposal to cut taxes and reset the cap or eliminate it at the time. It didn't pass. I supported it, and I was new to the council. But ever since then, since 2008, we went through this big economic downturn. And during that downturn, the county lost revenue because they never changed the tax rates. So the cap continued to protect some homeowners, but they kept going up at 2%. And then other homeowners had really higher taxes. So the same valued homes, some people would be paying as little as $100 a year in property taxes for all the county services, and other people would be paying over 1,000 for the same similar, even 1,800. It made no rhyme or reason. So the best way to deal with this, Mayor Baptiste thought, and I have, was to lower taxes for the people who live here and ask more from hotels, resorts, and people who do business here, like vacation rentals. The community kind of agreed with that. In 2012, I introduced a bill that would have reset the cap, kept the cap in place for everyone who had it, but bring taxes down so the people who are paying too much, and then put them under the cap as well. Unfortunately, that bill didn't pass. In the last 2 years, that budget, I proposed reducing taxes, the tax rate. So if we would have reduced the tax, and this was discussed at the council during the budget session, Steve Hunt gave this presentation, said that there would be hundreds of people that would have these large increases. I put forward proposals to do something about that, and I have done that several times. And now, But that's the history. That's the past.
So it, shouldn't have been any surprise to anybody that it was going to go up, because it sounds like it was discussed at length at many council meetings.
I've read the minutes. I read a statement I made in May, and I can paraphrase it, but I read it, you know, from the minutes yesterday. I said, listen, this is the year we reset the cap. We voted for that. It was the mayor's proposal. We accepted it. And this will mean, now, what people need to understand is 5,000 people got very big tax decreases this year because they were paying way high taxes compared to their neighbors who were below this line where the market tax is. You know, I put this up on graphs and illustrated it ever since 2008, and shown that we have these big disparities, and to correct it, we have to have a plan. In the long run, you know, like I said, the big proposal I put forward was in January 2012, was Bill 2445, that would have increased homeowners exemptions and cut taxes and put the, and kind of reset the cap and keep it in place. And nobody would have paid increases, but a lot of people would have got decreases because we would have been reducing the tax for local people. The irony of this is that between 2008 and 2012, and this is in my statement, the tax bills for hotels, resorts, vacation rentals, people who, landlords who rent their homes long-term and short-term, but that's basically a business thing, their taxes went down considerably, while at the same time, because the cap, on the way up, the cap protected. But when the values were falling, the people who were capped kept going up at 2%. And so the homes, the people who live here pay higher taxes for 4 years, while the people who own property here but don't live here pay lower taxes. And so I thought the council in 2012 would agree that we could give, if all these other classes were having these tax breaks, that we could have the homestead tax class do the same. Now, what's important is where we are now, and the good news at the council is all of the people at the council, believe me, all of the council members, and they may have a different view of this history than me. I believe that this is supported by the public.
Tim, excuse me a second there. Yeah, the fidelity on your phone call is not that great there, so I don't know if there's anything you can do on your end to improve it, get in a better place, speak directly into the phone a little louder, something like that, but it's kind of coming and going here. But go ahead and continue.
There is something I could do, but it would mean a five-minute break. So,
okay.
Is this any better?
Yes, it's better already.
So what I really want to talk about is not what happened in the past, and I've already done that. I want to talk about what we can do now. And we had a good council meeting this week, and all of the council members have their attention on this, and they have good ideas. Council member Hooser in particular is working on specific proposals. Steve Hunt, who has been a very outstanding member of mayor's staff, who's been very clear with us about these proposals and what their impact would be, and what the choices are that we have to make. And like I said, that's part of the record. But now the council members and Mr. Hunt and the mayor, I'm sure, all want to say, okay, regardless of why, these people who were mistakenly put in a wrong class, and I can talk technically, that had really big impacts on people. And we can fix it. We can get them in the right class, and then it will alleviate their large concern.
Now, what do you mean when somebody...
people who have these very low taxes, right, for a long time, but now they're being asked to pay market taxes, and those people, those citizens, saw their taxes go up. And 300 or 400 of them went up considerably, like more than $250 or $300. Now, Steve gave us all those charts during budget. That's why Councilmember Hooser and I, doing this budget year, tried to reduce the homestead tax rate to 255. That was our proposal for revenue, was to reduce the, and that would have made many fewer units. I remember the numbers because there was a spreadsheet that I put on the council floor that showed every resident the people who've been calling me, I just look here at my computer and I tell them what happened. And a lot of it we can fix. The council wants to fix it. And that's going to be prime attention, I can guarantee you, by all the members, who I think you'll see work really collaboratively, because they certainly all got the message.
So, Tim, what do you mean when somebody's taxed in the wrong class? What is it?
Okay, let me explain that. We have restructured this in a way that I think people will really appreciate, which is if they're in the right class and they're being taxed properly and they don't see big increases. Because like I said, and you know, some of you will discover this, you don't even know that your taxes came down considerably. And like people are going to get mortgage statements that say, hey, your payment went down to $100 a month. Down to $100 a month because the county gave you market taxes. Because a lot of people were paying way too much. The people, our new structure is we have the lowest tax rate and the biggest credits for people who live in their homes, obviously. And we've made those better. And that's called homestead class. So let's look at one house. Say you have a house and you live in it. The tax rate is $3.05 and the first $160,000 of value is exempt. Now let's say that same house is used as a long-term rental at that's kept affordable and it will stay in the homestead class. So even if you own a house and you don't live in it, but you keep it affordable at rates that are set and you apply for it, you stay in the homestead rate. But if you want to rent that house at, at a higher rent, say, then you pay the single family residential rate. If you use that house for a vacation rental, then you pay the vacation rental rate, which is much higher. So we have set up a system where we're incentivizing keeping rents low for people who don't own homes and need housing and keeping rents, so you want to keep your home in that homestead class. If there was a mistake in that decision, either for whatever reason, because the tax department wasn't clear or the people weren't clear about the right answers, then we can discover that and fix it. So am I answering your question?
Yeah. So different classes are based on the use of the property, whether it's
right.
A rental or a home owner-occupied.
Right. So, I think most people would agree with that system that we tax the use differently.
Sure.
And that's true of, like, a condominium, too. If you live in your condominium and that's your home, we used to say, well, you pay the condominium rate. No, we say that's your home. You pay the homestead rate. If you use it as a long-term rental that a local person can live in, then you pay the single-family rate, which is kind of a mid-rate. But if you have it in short-term rental, which means it's not even available for local people to use, and you're getting higher fees rates for it, you're going to pay the vacation rental rate. Now, a lot of people complaining about higher taxes don't fall in those first two categories, right? There are also people calling me who own vacation rentals. And 2 years ago, we put them in a different class and they saw a tax increase. And this year, their taxes went up again, and they're unhappy.
Right. My taxes went up 25% in my house, and so I guess I'm one of the unlucky ones there.
Well, it's the way you look at it. It's because of the removal of the 2% cap, your taxes went up because you were paying way lower taxes than a lot of your neighbors for the ever since you've been under the cap. And that for some people, that's like 14 years. But other people who weren't covered by the cap, they bought their homes later or they just, didn't apply or whatever, they were paying much, much higher taxes, and those people, their taxes have come down. So this year was the leveling year. What I advocate is, well, if you bring the line down and you bring taxes lower for the whole class, then the people who have increases are much fewer, and
the increases they experience are smaller. So, Dave, are you on the, if it's because you removed the 2% cap, it's bad that your taxes went up. And, you know, like I said, in 2012, I put a proposal that said, you know what, everybody who has a cap now, they just stay there. And then let's lower taxes and then put everybody under the cap. But the council didn't, and then didn't, you know, that wasn't approved. That same year, I suggested lowering the rate to 305 from the 420 and the 3. It was separate for land, and that did pass, and that was the 1 year in the last four when the class, you know, the homestead class saw a reduction. But, and then the last 2 years, it's like, well, if you don't want to, if you're going to remove the cap, let's lower the rate. So I that vote was 5-2. You know, it was the mayor's proposal.
Hello, are you there?
Yes.
I think you kind of dropped out there for a couple seconds.
Is this better?
Yeah.
So, you know, when we removed the cap, we knew these resets were going to occur. And then I put proposals forward a couple of times to try to deal with it. And this year's budget is part of the public record. Jerry Hoosier and I made a proposal to lower it to 255. And I can show you on a graph how it basically then a couple of thousand fewer people would have had increases than the ones who did. The increases would have been much smaller. But that proposal failed on a 5-2 vote. So that's part of the public record. So,
right. Now, I'm not sure how much time you've got, but do you have time to take some calls, if anybody?
I'll try.
Okay, just for the listeners, if you have any questions of Tim Bynum regarding the property tax issue or really anything you want to talk to Tim about, give us a call in the studio, 826-7771. So Tim, how is the total revenue number now based on the new property tax regime there? How is that? Is the county bringing in a lot more money off of property taxes, the same amount, or what?
No, this year, so to answer that question, when the economic downturn came is right when Bernard became the mayor, and he gave us good spending proposals. This is part of our audited reports. For 2 or 3 years, his first 2 or 3 years, our spending went down because we were responding to this economic crisis. The problem, and we had a large surplus at the time. The problem was in revenue. As the assessed values fell, business, ag, big landowners, and out-of-state owners, and local owners that had businesses had property for business purposes watched their taxes go down 4 years in a row, almost $30 million less revenue than if their taxes would have stayed at the 2008 rate. During the same 4 years, the homestead class saw not a reduction in taxes, but an increase of $1.4 million. You have to ask, and then we come into this budget year. So with those losses of revenue, our surplus started dwindling. Now, for the state, the economic crisis is over, right? But the state took the chair said this week, Chair Fafaro, who knows finance well, said that the state took $27 million from the county's share of the TAT. That comes from the visitor industry. So the other people that are not happy, as I said, about their tax increases this year are the hotels and resorts. Well, that TAT tax came from the resort industry. Now the state has it so they can enjoy their surplus. But the county's left with this hole in the budget. At the same time, police, HGEA, UPW, the employee unions are getting increases. They got new union contracts. Now, our public employees paid their share. They got furloughed, and they had reductions in their, they watched their pay go down And so they made their contribution. But as the state is saying, oh, we're recovered, we're doing good, they left a big hole in our budget. And so the council agreed to increase taxes for hotels, resorts, and vacation rentals this year significantly because we have to pay the bills. We have to pay. We have costs that are fixed. And, you know, during budget, in my mind, it's not true that we've overspent. We've tightened things up because we went through this economic crisis. The question becomes, what is it we do now, the county does, that you want us to stop doing if we're going to cut further? Do we cut out elderly affairs, or do we cut out the housing assistance? No, we can't do that because the federal government requires us to do it. So the county does lots of great things for people, and we're getting pretty good at it. The mayor has got some great department heads that are working collaboratively. There's a lot of great things happening in the county right now. But the politics of this state took a big hole out of our budget and our own. So we had to increase revenue this year. It was just, who's going to pay the bill? For me, that's always been the question. Who pays the bill? I think it's tough to live in Hawaii. We have sales tax. We have the evil GE tax that taxes everything we do. And if we can keep property taxes really low for people who live here and work here, I think that's a really good thing.
Right. Yeah, because the school budgets come out of the GE tax and not out of property tax. There's a lot of people from the mainland, California especially, are probably used to paying two or three times as much for property taxes here.
So, Dave, let me give you an example that I think illustrates this. I researched this one thing where I'm really concerned about an increase that happened for someone, a senior, right? And I looked at that whole neighborhood. This gentleman lives in a home that's worth is assessed at $550,000. So it's a pretty valuable property. And he's been paying about $28 a year in taxes for the last 14 years. Now, what are the market taxes on a $500,000 house? What is it the county, you know, if you live in a homestead class and you're a senior like this guy, and you have low income, then you get the first $320,000 of that value taken off, and you pay the 305 rate. So the taxes for this individual are $750. So he's going to see that increase this year if we don't do something.
So how is it that it was $28 to begin with? I mean, why was it so low?
Because in 2003... we said we're going to cap this, and we used the assessed values that the county had in 2003, and they didn't make any sense in reality. There were neighborhoods that hadn't had them changed for years, and they were very low. So to pay that much, you know, he had the senior discounts and stuff, right? But to pay that low, it was because it got capped at a value that was maybe $80,000 at the time or something like that, when in reality it was more. Then other neighborhoods, newer neighborhoods, had been assessed more recently, and they got capped at a more reasonable rate, right?
Right.
And so there were these big anomalies. And then on the other side of it, as the taxes went up, the council never lowered the rate. So as the values went up, the market rate went really high. So when a young family here got their first home, they would be paying, so in that neighborhood, there were people paying, he was paying 25, there were people paying 2,800 for that house. Now those people, for that same value, those people came down to like 1,500, or actually, so I wanted to ask that question. If you have a home worth $500,000, what's a reasonable tax to pay the county for all of the things we do? The market tax, I said, for a senior on a $500,000 home is $750 a year, which is what? About $65, $70 a month. Now that same house, if it's just somebody in their 40s, the market tax is about $1,200. Well, I don't think that's an unreasonable tax, $100 a month for a $500,000 home. Now, take that same house and make it, a vacation rental, you lose that exemption, so you have a $500,000 times the new rate, which is almost $9, I think it's $885. So 9 times 500 is 3,500, right? So that's the kind of graduated tax we have. But the point I'm trying to, for a 3,800, say a median is 470,000 median in the homestead costs, or 468 right now. And taxes on a home like that for a local resident would be, I can calculate it all on the spreadsheet, so,
yeah.
But it would be reasonable. But if you were paying only 200 in that neighborhood, but the guy across the street was paying, 2,100. And that's how big the disparities were. So those guys, so we set the new rate at 1,000, right? So the guy that was paying 28 comes down to 1,000. He's pretty happy.
Yeah.
The person who was paying 200 goes up to 1,000. They're not too happy.
Oh, I see. Okay. So those are the people that are grumbling here now.
Right. So what we were talking about, let's talk about solutions. What Councilmember Hooser was saying is, like, look, let's just say right now, no penalties, no interest. Pay what you paid last year, right? And then we can give credits. So, you know, we can give, and we can say, you know what? And then that will buy us some time. So we can make sure these things don't slap these folks right now. You know, because we didn't do it previously. But we got the attention. Let's do it now. And I think the whole council, and that's what I saw us working collaboratively with the leadership coming from the chair, as always, Steve up there saying, well, if we worked it this way, you know, we could do it quicker. We also talked about using administrative remedies that the mayor can do, you know, even quicker. So I can tell you the attention was certainly gotten from the letters we've got. Now, I want to say I've also gotten some letters from people who was like, oh, my taxes just went down $1,400. Thanks, county, for fixing these inequities, because I thought I was paying way too much.
Yeah. Those people don't write letters to the editor, though. In the
right. You don't see as many. No. And like I said, a lot of people, and that's the other thing that's scary, we got to move quick on this, is not everybody even knows that their taxes went up yet. If they're in one of these two categories, where at least I want to say these two categories, yes, we should do something about it right now. Now, the other folks whose rate went up because you are running in a vacation rental, I want to say if you choose to use that property differently, your taxes will go down, right? And that those structural changes that did that, the structural changes that put in an incentive are really strong. If you are a landlord and you rent the house at an affordable rate that the housing agency publishes, which is somewhere between $1,500 and $1,900, depending on the utility arrangement for a three-bedroom, you can put that home into the homestead rate. We're going to tax that really low because somebody's using it locally.
Right. Hey, we've
that
got a
sense?
Yeah, we've got a caller. Oh, wait, he hung up. Oh, never mind. No callers.
Well, you know, taxes are complicated, Dave, and each story has a different, and some of them we need to fix.
Right. Now, what is this tax workshop coming up on August 28th, then? What is that all about?
So, Councilmember Kagawa and working with the chair said, you know what, we need to respond to these letters that we're all getting, or these emails saying, gee, tell me what happened here. And so we need to have a coordinated effort, and so let's set this workshop up. To give us a special time set aside to hash it out legally. And so we had an agenda item this week that set the date for that and, you know, got the concurrence of all of the members. And then so we had a preliminary discussion about potential solutions and, you know, what our concerns were and different ways we see to do it. There were different proposals like reinstating the cap or rolling things back, but the devil's in the details. because we're not going to roll back and have the people who got tax decreases and say, oops, no, we meant you actually owe us more.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to take that back.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to propose that. And so that means if you give relief where you were expecting revenue, you've got to deal with it financially. We have a legal obligation to do a balanced budget, and we don't have a very big reserve anymore. So, and another reason the council raised revenues this year, even higher than the mayor said, is because we wanted to leave a reserve. Well, it may turn out a good thing we did. Does that make sense?
Why is it a good idea? I mean, obviously it's a good idea to have reserve there,
well,
but why particularly now?
If we're going to tell folks, well, you don't have to pay that $700, just pay $100 this year, and then give us some time to work it out, that means our revenues are be down, and we'll have to account for that. You know, You know, we're not like the federal government where we don't care if we spend more money than we bring in. We can't do that. It's against the law.
Right.
And so if we're going to, you know, say to folks, okay, we understand our revenues are going to be less, we're going to give you this relief, it's got to get paid for.
Right.
So
the workshop is for people to come in and learn about what they should be paying and how to get their class right.
No, that's a good question, because the council and in our rules, committees can do workshops that are educational in nature, and you're saying this issue is going to take more time than just one agenda item on the council, right? So we're going to set it at a different time and place, and have one topic. And it is for deliberation for the council, and because, you know, under a clean democracy, we have this deliberation in public, not amongst ourselves. Right? That's the Sunshine Law that we all abide by. So this is a chance for the council members to come together with a special time that the community can be involved in by offering public testimony. But it's where we're crafting the solution.
Okay. Hey, we do have a phone call now here. Let's go to the caller and see what he's got to say. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to let Mr. Bynum know and all the rest of the county council candidates is that the message that the majority of the citizens of this island are, we want to pay less taxes and we want less government. We have too much government. We're overburdened with government, and I want to see a government shrunk. If it means less services, that's fine. But I want payrolls of government employees slashed and eliminated. And I think I speak for thousands of people on this island.
Now, caller, what in particular on the county side do you think could be eliminated? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, when you send like six guys out in a county work truck to hold one shovel, that's kind of one of the first.
So they're not very
efficient.
I
know some of those are state trucks, but, you know, it multiplies from the county to the state to the federal government. And our government's gotten too big, and it's a ridiculous thing. And if the government doesn't see it soon, then the only way to respond is to have a revolution.
Okay, Tim, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, sure. I understand the sentiment, but this is county. We're about police, fire, roads, parks, getting housing for local people, taking care of our kupuna and seniors, summer fun so our working people can have a place for their kids so they can stay on the job. What is it that, I think I always feel like these big government things like that must be for the federal government, because I don't know what it is the county does that we want to stop doing.
I can give you an example as far as the police. The last 3 months, the Quiet Police Department seems to think that Art Night in Kapaa is the time to, like, saturate Kapaa Town with a massive police force. There's never been a problem with crime, with drinking in public or anything on art night since it was started. Because I've been to almost every art night until I got so disgusted with the fact that there's so many cops that are giving tickets to people parking in front of Polo Market on this one Saturday out of the month, when every other day out of the month you can park in front of Polo Market and not get a ticket. You've got cops rolling up and down the street on Segways. I mean, those things probably cost $12,000, plus you probably train the cop, costing us another $6,000 to ride on one of them. We don't need Segways. Give the guy a freaking moped or a golf cart. Or better yet, give him a bicycle. We don't need, like, a heavy police state on our little island. You need vice cops out there busting people that are selling OxyContin and meth. You don't need cops out there busting people for parking in front of Pono Market.
Okay, caller, thanks for the call there, and we're going to let Tim respond to that.
Yeah, I'll just respond and say I go to first, I think he's talking about First Saturday in Kapaa, and I was there last week, and I didn't see this kind of police presence. But what I will say is, in regards to county workers too, I know the cliche about that, but, you know, the vast majority of county workers I know and see and work with bust their butt to take care of our community. They are our community. It's like your friends and neighbors. The police department, under the current chief's leadership, we finally got fully staffed. Police officers have had raises. I've supported those things. We hope to expand beats and put more police officers on the street. If there's concerns about some particular action or behavior or equipment, the police department, I think, is the place to take that. Or if it's a serious concern, I think any council member will respond to constituents. But, you know, I think First Saturday has been great economic revival for Kapaa Town. The merchants have taken it in their own hands, and it's become a really nice thing. But we have traffic issues and other things, so I'm sure there were more police there than usual when there's a whole lot of people gathered in one place. So
yeah, I was there last month. Didn't go this month, but I did notice a lot of police there, and they were yelling at people for jaywalking. If they didn't cross, I mean, there's like 2,000 people there. The, you know, mobs are crowding into the street, and people just walk across, and they're threatening to ticket people for jaywalking when it really didn't seem to be a public health concern. But we do have another call.
I'm really sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Thanks. A question regarding our police department. Can you tell me what percentage of the new, seemingly SUV type of vehicles are four-wheel drive and the percentage which are two-wheel drive?
I couldn't off the top of my head, but I certainly that's something that I can find out. We have, you know, in terms of four-wheel drive, in the past, I know the council has really encouraged the police to have at least a few four-wheel drive vehicles available because we have issues on the course line and that. So, but how the mix is right now, I mean, I've noticed these new SUVs, too, and to be honest, I didn't know that they were moving to those, so it's an interesting question.
It's been my impression that most of these new SUV type of vehicles are two-wheel drive, which seems illogical.
Yeah, I know that having four-wheel drive in the fleet has been an issue in the past. It's just something I don't recall discussing in the last couple of years. What we have discussed a lot about county vehicles is because I've seen it all. When I came into county, the whole fleet was falling apart. And then all of a sudden, we had all these bright and shiny new ones. And that's during that economic upswing. And now we're going to fleets, and we're really questioning closely about how many cars we need. And the police are doing more flexibility in their vehicles, too. But how, these particular units and whether – I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just been my impression, I may be wrong, that most of these new SUVs are two-wheel drive, which it doesn't make any sense to me. In case there is an emergency situation, the police should have full capacity to respond.
And
yeah,
I just think as long as you just spend the buck for these fancy new vehicles. But the one thing I'd like to give a shout out to the county is that I live in Kalua, and there's a little park called Waikomo, and the guys do a really good job in keeping the place up.
Hey, thanks for that, Sean.
And it's like it's never a mess, and they even have some guy come out on the weekend and empty the trash cans, and there's never any trash. There's no, like, low-life individuals hanging out doing whatever they're doing. And, yeah, I just think we should at the county level, we should have these basic services. And I think these people are complaining about property taxes. I mean, if you lived in the mainland, your property taxes would be 3 to 5 times what they would be here.
It's true. On a national perspective, we have very low property taxes.
I mean, the strange thing, of course, is I tell people when I talk to folks on the mainland, you know, I said, you know, a crummy track house, which is, that's my values, a crummy track house on Kauai is like $500,000 or $600,000, where you can get a mansion in the mainland for $300,000 or $400,000. And people go, no. I go, yeah. I said, well, the land is the thing that's so valuable.
Land is a big part of it, particularly if you're in certain...
Oh, come on, the houses are junk compared to the mainland. But, I mean, you know, who wants to live in the mainland? I mean, you know, we'd rather live here except for the GMO poisoners. I want to thank you and Mr. Hoosier, especially you guys, are the conscience of the council. And thank you so much for the good job, Tim.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Tim, I'm not sure how much time you have to talk with us.
I'm kind of on a roll. I'm surprised you've let me talk so much.
No, you're doing good there. I need to do a little station business, but if you're willing to talk with us, I've got a couple more questions. And
let me call you back, because if I recycle my phone, I'll have a much better connection.
Okay, yeah. I want you to call back in just a minute or as soon as you can, and I'll take care of the station business, and we'll talk to you in just a few.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Okay, well, we've been talking with County Council Person Tim Bynum, and he's going to call right back in, but I need to tell you that you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and K284AL in Haleiwa Town, Oahu. And this out-of-the-box program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these underwriters.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
And mahalo to those folks for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Okay, well, we've got an hour left in the show, and we are going to be talking with Tim Bynum here in just a minute. We're expecting a call back from him. And so, but in the meantime, let me give you a quick update on the hurricanes. I guess Hurricane Isel is hitting Hilo now, and they're experiencing heavy rainfall and winds of over 90 miles per hour. So they're not having much fun over there right now. And but the storm is expected to fall apart after it hits the Big Island and go south of Kauai. So we are even outside of the area of the tropical storm warning. So we're still likely to get a bunch of rain out of it starting tomorrow, or actually later tonight and into tomorrow. And then there'll be a little respite Saturday, and then Sunday Julio will be coming through, what's left of it anyway, and it will be passing north of the island according to current predictions. And we are, again, outside of the tropical storm track of that event, and we're basically going to get a bunch of rain. Winds really shouldn't be over 30 miles per hour if all goes well for us here. So that's good news for Kauai, not too good news for Hilo. So hopefully those folks are batting down, and we'll be hearing shortly what's going on over there.
Is that Tim back?
No, it's somebody who wants to speak.
Oh, we got to clear one of those lines so Tim can call in.
Oh, then.
Yeah, we only have those two lines. So just tell him, call back in a minute.
Okay, well, we're still waiting for Tim Bynum to call back in. So tell you what, we're going to do a quick music break, and then and we'll be right back in a moment. Okay, that was David Bromberg. What a Wonderful World. Okay, we're going... still waiting for Mr. Bynum. Oh, here he is. He's on the phone right now.
There's another guy who wants to say something first.
Okay, we're going to go to another caller.
Yeah, right.
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You know, at the mayor debate last night, Dustin Barker was the only one who said anything legitimately about this tax increase. And first of all, he said it was just, you know, it should have been front page news that this was coming down the barrel head, you know, instead of all of a sudden it's here, you know, some people's taxes are doubled or tripled. And then he used California and old Proposition 13 or something the buying value of your house when you buy it, if you bought it 20 years ago and you're paying X amount of tax, that should stay that way forever. So, because he was making the point that when people buy homes, they should be able to live in those homes the rest of your life because that's a dream come true. Instead of taxes going up and up and up, until only millionaires can live in Hawaii. Yeah. I mean, it's just like a disgrace, you know, that this tax thing happened, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, what do you think about the proposal or the idea that your taxes are locked in at the purchase price? What do you think of that?
Well, I don't know, because I've never owned anything, and I'll never have enough money to own anything anyways. You know, I'm in a position where I rent. But if the person that I rent from loses their house, then I'm up a creek.
Yeah. So basically,
so it affects me in the long run. And unless there was some free place for me to put a tent, you know, and I'd live in a tent and be happy with it, you know. But the thing is about, you know, if I came into your house and stole all your property and basically stole your house or burned it to the ground or did something like that, I'd be a criminal. You know, and if for anybody who would raise somebody's taxes to where they were just out of their range, to where they couldn't pay it, so the bank would repossess their house or something, they'd lose their house, they'd be out on the street. It's like highway robbery. And if you were that person, you wouldn't care whether Kauai even had a fire department or a police department or a city council or a mayor or anything.
Yeah.
You wouldn't care about the streets or whether the lights were green or yellow or red, you know, because, you know, it's just like, I mean, I feel very awkward because I don't know what my landlord's issues are with his tax, and I don't want to ask him. But I feel so, you know, I'd much rather pay, instead of seeing just one person who's lived in a house for 20 years and have to lose their home, you know, because of property tax, you know, that I'd much rather pay I'd rather pay 30 cents more a gallon for gas.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
hey, Tim.
Or anything like that, because to take people's homes away for tax is should. When Mr. Bynum, who I really like, he's a great city council. When he's talking about it's the law, you know, I mean, where does the buck stop? Right. Anyways, bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the call. Okay, we're going to go back to Tim Bynum. Hello, Tim, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, sorry about that. Took a little longer to get you on than we thought there. A little technical
difficulty. Sorry. There should be a better connection.
Okay, very good. Well, let's see. We were talking about, let's see, the attack works. We do have a call coming in. Let's see if somebody wants to talk to you. Yeah, they're going to go right to the phones here now.
Okay.
Seems like there's a lot of... Did you hear that previous caller?
Hello. I heard parts of it.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Councilman Bynum a question.
He's on the air with you.
Oh, okay. Now, I know he's really concerned about the petrochemical firms, the GMO firms, and the taxes that they're not paying. If he could explain to us... all the revenues we would have been collecting if they were paying their fair share, and what happened to his proposal to get this thing through the council, what happened with that? Because if he's elected, I hope he can pursue this matter again, and I'll hang up and listen. Okay? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right, Tim, did you hear that?
I certainly did, and I'm happy to talk about that. Are you still there?
Yes, we're here.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay. Where do I begin? I have a bill before council now, and I was already elected 2 years ago, and I intend to pursue this matter during this term if I'm allowed to, regardless of the outcome of the election. It's a simple question that I'm asking the council and the community. We have a program called Ag Dedication that gives around $8.4 million a year of relief for agricultural land. And I support that program 120%. And the way the law is written is it says, if you don't have to pay the market rate for your land if you keep it in production, producing a product that's sold. And so, we have two categories, ranching and diversified ag. So all landowners that have ag land, we want to incentivize it being in production, employing people, growing food, or growing coffee, or flowers, or a product. And we give tax subsidies for that, and I support those tax subsidies. Now, the seed companies came here, and they are using the land for research. They're not producing a product on the majority of the land that they have. They are producing some small product here, is my understanding. And I was told by Dow that that's very limited. Most of it is just a research. So I didn't think the law fit. I still don't think the law fits. But whether it does or not, it's just a simple question. Do we want to give the same tax incentives to the companies or to the land that's being used for research purposes that we give to people who grow food that they sell at the farmer's market, or to Kauai Coffee, say, that produces a product that generates other kinds of revenue for government, and supports us. So this bill is an agronomics bill, is the way it's been labeled, and it basically says it creates a new tax category, and it says if you're using the land for this purpose, then we're going to put you in this tax category, and then next year we can decide if you should continue to get a tax subsidy, if you should pay lower taxes or higher taxes. That will be up. But it doesn't fit in the ag dedication bill as it's currently written, in my opinion.
Right. Now is that necessary? I mean, if it's not in the bill that exists now, I mean, can't you just start charging them right away? I mean, do you need another bill?
Well, I've asked that opinion. I have asked that opinion of the county attorney, and their initial response was, no, this is appropriate under diversified ag. Now, during the course of researching this, I discovered that when these lands transitioned, you know, when Cain left, a lot of people were happy at the time that seed companies and others were going to put the land to use. But it turns out that the seed companies didn't just take the lands that were left fallow. they took lands that were being used for ranching and growing food and other purposes, and those people lost their businesses. And so I discovered that in the process. Now, I also discovered in the process that when these changes of use occur, because we're giving tax benefits, these things are recorded in the deed of the land, right? That the landowner has to inform us when he changes the use from one use to another. He has to amend or reapply for ag dedication. And the law has penalties if he doesn't do that. And I've discovered that these changes were made, some of them years ago in 2008, 2010, but there was no petition or none of the legal requirements were done to inform the county of the changes and make the proper changes in the taxes. Then I discovered that it appears clear now that this vast expansion and change of use that went from cane to research or from cattle to research that happened on our land happened without the required exemption, agricultural exemption from our grading and grubbing ordinance. It's a complex issue, but this is a law that we strengthened in 2008 to protect the environment, to protect the health and safety, and to protect the community from problems that can go wrong on agriculture. If you disturb the ground to build a building, the grading and grubbing ordinance applies. If you disturb the ground for agriculture, the grading and grubbing ordinance applies until such time as you get an exemption from that ordinance by following a set of rules and laws. It appears clear to me that at least Dow and Pioneer in the Puhi and Lihui areas where they expanded their operations didn't have these conservation plans in place until years later after they made the changes. And that has very serious implications. These are major law violations, in my opinion, of our health and safety and environmental laws. Similar violations happened at Pilaw and resulted in $6.5 million fine. Similar violations happened at Coloco and people died. And as a result of those past indiscretions and many more and abuse of this law, it was strengthened in 2008 and it needs to be applied in the provisions that our community came together. This is very serious stuff. And we need to read about it on timbynum.com and what those positions are. I put these concerns in a letter to the mayor, and he's considering what his response will be as we speak, because it has very significant implications.
Right. Okay, we do have another caller. Let's go to the phone. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was speaking to someone who is on the city council, a very nice woman, and a couple weeks ago our mayor was on KKCR on Carlos's show, and he said that he was not for raising the taxes for the people of Kauai. The council person told me that he did vote to raise the cap. Is that like two different answers?
Yes. If I understand your question. I explained this earlier, but I voted to raise the cap. It was the mayor's proposal. In 2012, I put a proposal on the council to keep the cap, lower taxes for local people, and then reset those caps at those new levels, and nobody would have gotten increases. But that failed. Subsequent to that, the mayor said, these are inequities. There were huge inequities caused by the cap. That's just a fact. We need to cure them, and his proposal was what he called revenue neutral, which means is we're going to get the same amount of money from the homestead class, but we're going to correct these inequities. Well, that automatically meant that almost 5,000 people were going to get tax increases. On the flip side, 5,000 people were going to get tax decreases. That's, that was the mayor's proposal. Now, I said structurally I agree with this. We have to these inequities. But we also have to lower the tax rate significantly and lower taxes for everyone so these increases are not draconian and there are fewer of them. That proposal was supported by 3 members last year and 2 members this year. So in the intervening time, we, and I discussed it and others discussed it, Steve Hunt said, if we don't change these rates, these are the outcomes. I put a spreadsheet on the council floor that I'll share with anyone that you could plug in the rates and see person by person what impact it was going to have. And I said on the council floor, if we don't change these rates, these big increases are going to happen. And when the bills come, people are going to yell. That's exactly what just happened. So removing the cap under those circumstances with that history, in my mind, was the right thing to do. And then followed up by lowering the tax rate and lowering taxes as the people that live and work here deserve. And I've been making that argument that Mayor Baptiste first made in 2008 when I was first on the council. And I supported that proposal. And ever since, I've been saying that's what we need to do. We need to lower taxes for people that live and work here and ask hotels, resorts, vacation rentals, and people who use their properties to make money to pay a little more. And so anyway, I hope I answered your question.
Can I ask you another question, please?
Please do.
Oh, thank you so much. And can it be about another topic?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Kilauea has an amazing skateboard park. Kapaz sucks. It's really depressing. I was told there was money put aside by the mayor, I believe. I might not have all my information correct, but by the mayor to fix up the skateboard park. And I was wondering what's going on with that, what takes so long, and also what about the bus stops between, like, Anahola all the way to the other side of the island with these little $15 plastic chairs that you buy at Walmart or Kmart, which are good around a barbecue, but at a bus stop in the hot, hot, hot sun, they're handicapped people, mentally, physically, elderly people, and some just poor people, and some just really want to catch the bus. Why can't, and I know it's about we have to have it so that for handicapped people it can take their wheelchair and things like that, but in the meantime, can't something be done? This is like a really hot summer, and it should have been done a long time ago.
Okay, thank you, caller. We'll take that off the air. Okay, Tim?
Yeah, I remember both, but there was bus stops, and, you know, and then the frustration of why things take so long in the skate park. You know, I've been involved in that Kapaz skate park for a long time because, you know, before I was a council member, I worked with Mayor Baptiste. And so it was like, yes, there are plans to do skate park there in Kapaz and others. And Lenny Raposo, our parks director, gives updates to the council. We all would like to do things faster. I would have to check after our last budget proposal if whether those timelines are still the same, but there is an intention to improve the Kapaz and do other ones in other parts of the community. And I to get a more detailed account, I mean, I said there's a lot of great things happening in the county. One of them is our planning department and some of the initiatives that parks waited on for a long time are starting to happen. You're seeing them. A really great new safety surfacing for our playgrounds that's going to be more economical and safer, and these kind of park changes. But the first part of this whole discussion was, and a lot of people, including council members, are saying, no, don't spend any more money on anything. You know, don't. And so that's the balance. It's interesting. Sometimes the same people who are telling you to cut spending come in during the time and say, but that doesn't mean my baseball park. We need to do that one, right? So it's tough being a council member for all of us to try to balance these needs with what our resources are, yeah? Bus stops. Are you still there?
We are here. The caller is listening, though.
Okay, so bus stops. You know, Hurricane Amici is 25 years ago now. I mean, those of us who went through it, it's a life experience we don't want to repeat, and hopefully we won't this week. but we had no bus prior to Hurricane Amici. The bus system was started by Joanne as an emergency response And we knew that it was part of what we needed to do for our community to have a good future. And there's been overwhelming support for the expansion of the bus. And now it's become an essential and integral part of what we do. We can't abandon that. There are people who depend on the bus. Now, shelters, oh, man, we set up bus stops by putting up posts and putting in little pieces of asphalt. We're slowly getting our act together. It should be faster. And then what you see at these bus stops are these menahonies, right? The menahonies that come out and do these, there's a rocking bench in Kapa. And, you know, people who are, because what we had, our infrastructure at this date, and some of our bus stops are just a sign and a white spot of asphalt. Community members have helped us, and we're working on trying to keep it cost effective. And there is a rollout of new bus stops happening. Again, in this budget climate, when people are hammering us to not spend 1 cent more, how do you justify spending more money on new bus stops? I mean, that's the yin and the yang. I personally think we're continuing to roll out bus stops, and we have to, because, as the caller said, who uses the bus? There are people who use it because they want to save money, because they want to have time to work while they're going on the bus, and they have other transportation options. But a big portion of our community is dependent on that for their life, to get from one place to another in their livelihood. So we need to continue to improve and expand, and I think we are.
Yeah. We just had a call from a county employee of the Parks Department who didn't want to go on the air, but he said that the plans for the upgrade of the Kapa Skate Park are in the works. They're getting permits. They're moving ahead, and construction should be starting on that shortly. So,
we have a Parks Department, and this other perspective is, the community asked for a Parks Department, and we created it. Bernard was the first director, and he did a good job, and we had big plans. And people wanted to see improvements in the parks, especially in maintenance. And they saw some improvement, and then we hit this economic downturn where we froze positions. We said, this position's vacant, we're not filling it, right? Because we had to bite the bullet like they did all over the world. And so right when people were poised to see better parks, it kind of didn't happen.
Right.
Well, now it's happening, right? The planning staff, Lenny's been in a position a while, he knows his stuff. William Trujillo, Nancy McMahon, and Brian Van Gorp. We have a planning group that is spending our park money smart, right? Rather than just, but it took us 6 years to get that kind of staffing in place. It'd be a real shame to cut those folks when we just got them in place, right?
Right.
They're saving us money and improving the parks. And our park workers who take pride in their work. I got to shout out the Westside Sports Park guys that have been in place for years and just keep those fields pristine and set the standard for other parts of the island. And so there's a lot of good things happening in the county. And it's, I thought the budget this year was we've cut, we've pared. We already did the no travel for 4 years, or half the travel budgets. It's when do you get back to normal and provide the services you want in a leaner, tighter machine? And that's what the council has been working with the mayor. These high-profile things get a lot of attention and are disagreements by the nature of it. But the consensus we have and the things that we are doing together well as a county kind of doesn't get the same play.
Right.
Yeah?
Okay, that's great. We do have another caller. I'm not sure about your schedule.
I had appointments all afternoon, but they all canceled, and there was going to be a candidate swarm tonight on the North Shore, so...
That's right, yeah.
There's a hole in my schedule.
Well, that's great. Then this is your candidate forum here now. Yeah, somebody called in earlier, wondered if we were going to air the candidates forum, but it was canceled due to the weather. People need to make their preparations. So we have another call if you've got the time.
Sure.
Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, I appreciate everything you've been doing, Councilman Bynum, and in looking for some guidance in this primary election and regular election, I'm wondering if there are any candidates that you support for council and mayor.
you know, there's a long tradition on Kauai. You run your own campaign, especially when there are seven seats that are at large, and there are so many fine candidates. I mean, this is the most competitive year ever. It's the most difficult year politically for newcomers and for the people that have been around a long time. We don't know how things are going to fall out. There's not a lot of good predictions. I have a lot of respect for a lot of the candidates. I'm going to take a politician to answer on this one and say, well, what I will say is I work with the mayor. I love the mayor. He's a great guy. He has really good intentions. And, you know, some of the areas where Mr. Barca is talking and saying are just the areas where the mayor needs to pay more attention about sustainability, about a more an up-to-date approach to drug treatment and the drug problem in our county. You know, those are some of the areas where the mayor and I have disagreed, perhaps. You know, and so this is a really healthy debate, and Dustin's, you know, comporting himself really well and bringing these issues forward, and I think it's going to, I think he's going to get a lot more votes than people recognize. But I know I'm not endorsing any candidate for mayor. I have, no, but I suspect that I'll be working with Bernard next term, and there's a lot of things we work on really well together, and we'll have disagreements where we do. You know, I'm very interested in, well, I'm going to go out on a limb. You asked me, so I want to give a better answer. I'm supporting Dylan Hooser in the district that I vote in. I think he's going to serve us really well. I have deep respect for him. And in the last few years.
Hello, you there?
Yes, yeah, thank you very much. That's excellent.
Mahalo. Okay.
So I'm giving more than I should. So,
okay.
But, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I am looking for guidance, so. Thank you.
Well, I think you can talk to your friends and family. You know, I think we're going to have a mixed group in the next council. I hope I'm part of it.
Okay, thank you. Hello.
Okay, phone lines are open, 826-7771, if you have a question for Tim Bynum. Now, Tim, I wonder if you could give us a quick update on what's going on with the implementation of the Bill 2491, the pesticide disclosure bill. Is that all on hold with the lawsuit now, or are we moving ahead with the study, the regulations on this? Or
yes. Thank you for asking that question. You know, I was in federal court when we had our first oral hearings before the federal judge. It was something that I wouldn't want to miss, and I think you know, it was important to have council members present, and I chose to go. You know, the basic, we're expecting a ruling from that judge on the first round of court things any minute, literally. He could come out any time, probably by the end of August is what the most of the speculation I heard. In terms of the ordinance, it's the law. We have agreed in the lawsuit to delay implementation from August to October, I think it is. That's just tactical. It's part of what our legal team agreed on. Our legal team is Dave Minkins from Corriston, is through the county selection. We're really familiar with him as an attorney, and he just successfully argued the Kauai Springs case on behalf of the county, which is a landmark water use case in our state. And he's working collaboratively with the Center for Food Safety, George Kimbrell, and Earth Justice Paul Achitoff. The oral arguments were fascinating. The judge was totally engaged and very knowledgeable. He seemed to have made, you know, there's like 11 or there's like the volume of paper that goes back and forth is fascinating. It's public record and people should read it. The oral arguments were quite exciting. And so, in the county level, you know, we're not squabbling with the mayor about this. He's implementing and doing administrative rules, and we have staffing in place to implement the law. The intention is to implement the law. You know, it's possible outcomes that would be delayed by the court. And while we did legal arguments, it's also possible that the court will allow it to go forward. There were issues that may be referred to the state Supreme Court as questions,
was one of the options that I heard discussed that day. It was like part of the argument. And then if you want to get into the legal arguments, there are a whole bunch of legal arguments, but the one that I'm talking about and I hope is the one that prevails for the county is called the public trust doctrine. And in the state of Hawaii, we're a young state. We have a great constitution, and it says that we as elected officials are responsible with respect to health and the safety and the welfare and the aina and the land. It's a uniquely conservation-oriented document, our constitution, and we have a great Supreme Court that is guiding us in progressive ways. So we're hopeful that some of these decisions are made by our state Supreme Court. And in the state of Hawaii, I believe our county has the authority, not only the authority under the public trust doctrine, we have the responsibility to take action when we believe that the health and safety of our citizens is even potentially at risk. You know, the seed companies actually tried to change that law to say that a council member was only responsible to protect the economy of the island. They actually tried to take the part out of state law that we're responsible, but they failed. And I believe we still have that authority.
Right.
So we'll see what the courts say. But on the county side, we're moving towards implementation on deadline.
How about the
APHIS study?
Yeah, I'm sorry, about the APHIS. That's what I was going to ask you about.
The APHIS study is not being litigated that I'm aware of. This is a part of the law where the county said no one else has studied the potential health, economic, and environmental impacts of these practices of the seed companies that they're doing here, these research practices. You know, part of the huge problem, Dave, is the whole regulatory system assumes that these pesticides are being used in production. And in production, you don't spray them so frequently because you don't have 20, 30, 50 experiments happening on one field. I don't know what that number is. They're going to say, oh, you're wrong. Maybe it's 15 or maybe it's 12. But they divide up their big fields into smaller test plots, and that's what's led to this very high frequency and quantity of pesticides being sprayed on our island close to our homes. And I don't believe there's a I don't think anybody's ever studied that. The county is going to do, if it's whether it's now environmental and health impact study, right?
Right. Public
health. Hired a consultant. His name's Peter Adler. He has a certain process of fact-finding that has been employed with other island issues, and so that is proceeding regardless of the lawsuit as far as I'm concerned. As far as I know, I don't think.
Okay. We have another caller, then I would like to ask you a question. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
You know what? Tim, whatever happened to the amend the bill? All those signatures that were collected and then that were put on the wrong form, which is scandalous in my opinion. And then the people hustled. They had 3 weeks to meet the deadline. They got 3,000 signatures on the legitimate piece of paper, and somebody wouldn't accept this amend the bill. And I haven't heard anybody talk about it. I'd like to know. The only thing I heard was that it was just flat out, we don't have to give you an answer. We won't accept it. And that's one question. And the other question is, when the mayor, when he was talking last night, he always uses the term the master plan. He goes, oh, well, we bought Mike Sheehan's property down by Black Pot, this and that, blah, 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 the master plan, you know. And I'd like to know, what is the master plan? Is it going to be high-rise hotels in Hanalei Bay or what? You know, housing tracts up in Hanalei Valley? And one other thing, every person that gets off the plane should pay a $100 tax fee, you know. And plus, too, people that get paid so much money, like the guy who runs the utilities company, and then they spent millions and millions of dollars to move into this extravagant new building that they said they needed.
You know, and I don't know how you could skim money off the top out of there. I mean, even, like I say, salaries for city employees like the mayor, or, you know, where I don't know how much he gets, $120,000 a year or something like that. I don't know, you know.
Okay, call it. Let's give up. Okay, let's get to
I'll let you go. But when someone uses the term master plan, it reminds me of, like, Heil Hitler or something. You know
okay,
what I mean?
Okay, let's let Tim respond then. All right,
Tim. You'll have to help me because there's a lot of questions
okay,
there.
There
I'll start with Blackpot. That's what's leaping out at me.
Okay.
You know, again, this is an area where, in my opinion, there's a lot of good news. So, you know, the mayor, the council, we all have wanted to deal with the voting issue, with a whole bunch of issues related to the North Shore. And, you know, the county set itself on the course to acquire the Sheehan lands along the riverfront through eminent domain. It's one of the first times we've ever done that. And I think it's within our powers and a good thing. And we have virtually completed that process. That land is now in our hands. There are other parcels that may come to the county that will allow us to do a new Hanalei Blackpot Park. The intention is a park for us to use. The previous intention were more high-end homes. So I think the council, every single person on the council that's been on the council deserves credit for this because it's been unanimous support as far as I know. Now, I told you about our Parks Department. We have this great new little planning division that helps us save money by planning our playground replacements and not just doing it when it falls apart and somebody complains. It's kind of the old school, yeah? It's like, oh, no, let's have a schedule. Let's do it. Well, that staff can help. So the master plan is a community master plan. They will engage in a process with the community to say, hey, look, we can make this park all we would like it to be and have be as simple or, as you know, what amenities we put it in. I know in our community, a lot is going to be minimal amenities. Keep it the way it is, pretty much, right? But when you organize parking and have restrooms that people that have disabilities can use, that the sewage is treated environmentally responsibly, those are good things, right? So, you know, we hope to make that to make the public amenities eventually meet our community's expectations. So we don't know what the outcome of the master plan is. Right. In this day and age, you engage the community, you put in certain legal standards that have to be there when you build new public facilities. And so I hope that answers that question.
The other one was the petition to require the GMO companies to prove that their operations are safe.
Well, here's like amend the bill. No, the bill is passed, and amending bills is what we do at county councils. This is separate. Kauai Rising, an organized group, has been working on a charter amendment. They presented it to the county council initially, and I'll just say I support the integrity of our clerk and the elections officials that made this first decision that the petition did not follow the standards that are required by the law. And specifically, as I recall, it was like the names of the petitioners have to be on the signature page. And it was basically a misunderstanding. But, you know, the clerk's role, in my opinion, is a clerk to see that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and that the letter of the law is followed, right? And he did that in this instance. And I think Kauai Rising agrees that they made an error. But for whatever reason, they went out and collected the petitions. Now, what happened next is a whole different thing. Whether you support the amendment or not, in my mind, the whole reason for a petition process is to bypass the politicians, to get something on the ballot without council members or mayors interfering.
Sure.
And in the charter, it says, to me, it outlines, hey, it allows a role for the county attorney. It says, county attorney, you may tell them about the legality of their petition prior to it being placed on the ballot, so they have the option to make changes, right?
Okay.
That process has never been followed on any of our previous charter amendments or this one.
in April. That's what I asked of the county attorney. Will you please assist this community group in making sure that their charter amendment meets the legal parameters to be successful, right? Because the charter envisions that assistance. But it still leaves the power with the petitioner, because the county attorney could say, hey, I think there's a problem here and there, and he could say, and you can correct it, or it's irreparable, whatever. But his opinion would be in the mix, and then the ball would be in the petitioner's court to decide if they want to amend it, withdraw it, or move forward, right?
Okay.
So that's what I believe the charter clearly envisions the only role for government other than to count the vote. And for the clerk, the only role that I see is for him to count the votes if the petition is properly presented technically, right?
Yeah.
Now, the county attorney came in, and this has been an issue. This has really been an issue because two of our charter amendments have been overturned by the courts, right? And so we should be really cautious. That's why I said to the county attorney, hey, please help this group up front. We didn't do that last time. Look what happened, right? And so that didn't happen. But now the county attorney is saying, well, you know, you're putting forward a charter amendment, but it's really an initiative, which requires a higher standard of signatures. And so, you know, the county attorney opined, and they released this opinion, and they saying that the council needed, or the clerk, the council or the clerk needed to determine whether this was a charter amendment or more properly an initiative. I don't see anywhere in the charter where that is envisioned for the clerk or for the, I don't, now they're saying it came from these legal decisions, which I've read, but if that were the case, why didn't they amend the charter? Why didn't they bring up this issue prior to that? So my position is, our role as a council is just what it says in the charter. We receive it. The people come and say, here, council. And because the clerk is housed in the same place as the council, we say, here, clerk, is it properly presented? And he says yes, and then he counts the votes to make to see if it meets. The council just intervened on a four to three vote to not do that, to not receive it and transmit it to the, I voted against that. I believe that this is highly inappropriate that the political side of this equation intervened in what is by its very nature meant to be a way to bypass the political process for the citizens to go directly to the ballot.
So you think the vote was political and that they didn't like the wording of it? They didn't want to
I'm not going to characterize the intention of the other members.
Well, what was the discussion? What was the discussion?
Well, the discussion was that our attorney was advising us that we had not only the power but the responsibility to determine whether this charter amendment, and we had a big, long discussion about it with the county attorney, and I asked this key question to me. It was a key question. Okay, let's say, well, there's two key questions to me. One is, why didn't you give this opinion to the group, as it said in the charters, when they still had time to do something about with it, right? Well, they haven't even answered that question. But the other question is, I'm sorry, I'm losing track of my thought. I remember. Yes, thank you. It's like, okay, you're saying not all of this is a charter amendment, but one part of it that creates a new department, right, is clearly charter. So I asked the county attorney, isn't it possible that the courts would look at this and because it has severability clauses like any legislation does, and the courts would only strike the provisions that were not charter, but keep the creation of the new department and some of the other provisions. And the county attorney said that's possible. And so I said, well, that's what we should do. I'm not at all convinced. And if this standard is legal, then we should change the charter. We should, you know, why did it just come up now? And so, you know, I voted to receive the bill, to receive the signatures would have allowed the process to continue. And I believe it should go on the ballot. Imagine that the county attorney said to the group, hey, your thing is legally flawed and the court's likely to overturn it. Well, that would be in the public record, and then people could make their voting decision based on that knowledge base. Right. And the committee, you know what I mean?
So this kind of makes it impossible for the voters or the petitioners to change anything, for that matter. I mean,
well, now it's not possible that for them to do that, because the only way to do that is if the county attorney assists them, and the county attorney declined or didn't do that. Maybe didn't decline, but it didn't happen.
Right.
And I wrote when I first heard of the petition, because, you know, it's not like this came out of nowhere. We know the community is organizing. We're having dialogue with all of these members. At least I am.
Yeah, all you do is listen to the show.
And so, anyway, I just think that this should have gone on the ballot. Now, does that mean I support that approach the initiative has taken? I haven't taken a position on that.
Yeah.
I may have chosen to vote against it, because I've already working hard on the direction I think we should go with this, which is disclosure and accountability and working within the Hawaii state and county laws that we have at our disposal. But that makes sense that I would take that position. I'm a county council member.
Right.
But the voters can say, you know what? No, we want a bigger step. We want more than you're offering. And I believe they have an avenue in our charter to put that before the voters, and I believe that was inappropriate for us to put an obstacle in the way of that.
Sure puts a lot of power in the office of the county attorney then, too. We have another call. We only have a few minutes left in the show here anyway, so let me take another call, and then we'll say
goodbye. Give me 50 seconds at the end, okay?
Okay. Yeah, give a little plug for your campaign, maybe. Okay,
caller. No, you don't do that on KKCR.
Oh, yeah, you do. We talk to all the candidates, yeah. So, caller, you're on the air.
Okay, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. A few callers ago, someone called and mentioned the sudden and very high property tax increase for some on Kauai, apparently. I haven't seen the breakdown. And I've talked to half a dozen of my friends, including myself. None of us are rock stars or movie stars. None of us are corporations. A couple of us, including myself, have dedicated our land to ag. And the taxes went up 400 to 600% in my case. One person from 2,400 it went to 9,600. Just from 7,000 to 15,000, unbelievable amounts overnight. And then I heard this statement that you made that I'll paraphrase it. That well, if the working people of the island get a little break, then the other people should pay a little more, is what I think you said. And that sounds really good, and I would say, well, then why is Monsanto getting the tax break they're getting on the west side of the island? And why such a sudden shock to people's system? Because all of these people are working as well. Again, none of these people that I've talked to are corporations, and I'd like to know how you can justify this.
I can't, and I'm not going to try to. And we spent most of this show talking about the various reasons taxes went up and the ones that I think are inappropriate. And I believe the council's agreement that we're going to do something about those ones that are inappropriate. Now, what's inappropriate is sometimes an eye of the beholder. And I, you know, said, if a big increase happened because you're running a vacation rental, we increase that rate. I voted to increase that rate, and I'll stand by that increase. If your taxes went up because you were put in the wrong tax category by mistake, whether it was the taxpayer's mistake or I don't care whose mistake, if you belong to be in a different tax category, we need to deal with that. And
right,
a lot of people
really knows exactly what this breakdown is. None of these people that, again, it's only half a dozen people have vacation rentals or anything like that. And my house is well under $1 million appraisal, and my appraisal goes down every year. And then, it's the suddenness of it. That seems like really...
Yes, I agree 100%. I agree.
But, well,
and
I guess I was concerned about your statement that, you know, with the working people get a little bit of break, other people should pay more. Who are these other people? We need to be more clear about
that. I'll answer that. I think I was. The vacation rental class, the hotel resort class, the people who own properties here but live elsewhere should pay a higher rate than people who live here and live in their home. And we've set up those structures. The problem that happened this year was
a number of people got, now, so I've responded to probably 40 or 50 individual circumstances, and I've seen all of that, and I have an answer, you know, so, but that's the process we need to go through. Why did your taxes go up? Was it appropriate? Was it part of a planned increase, or was it a mistake, or was it this increase caused by the removal of the cap that the council was aware of, but now is hearing loud and clear that that's not acceptable and there's an intention to do something about it? So, you know, you have to know the individual circumstance to know for me to respond.
And who do we go to with our individual circumstances? Because I'm glad to hear that the county realizes, even if this was a clever kind of tactic, I would have done it gradually so that people didn't notice. But I'm glad you're saying the council feels like they made an error here. But where do we go to correct this?
Now, they may not all agree with me about who made an error and why, and believe me, they won't all agree with my.
Okay.
I've just tried to give an answer that I believe is factual from the public record and from the meeting we just had that I thought was a really good meeting where all seven council members and the administration were, you know, saying, look, we're not, we can talk about what happened and why, but it's more important that we look forward and address these concerns. And I believe we will do that. We won't address, like I said earlier in the show, the community told us overwhelmingly they wanted us to tax vacation rental use of single family residents at a higher rate than if it was being rented long term to a local person.
I don't think they used that as a criteria exclusively, though, because they seem to do it by just the value of the property, regardless of the fact that, again, the few people I've talked to, well, I'll live on island year round. This is their only home, and they were hit because they had expensive homes.
And what I can tell you is if you want to call me or email me with your name and address, then I have a spreadsheet that's been that I demanded they give me over the last 3 years. I can look at every taxpayer on the island, and every council member has access to the spreadsheet. I put it up on the council floor live during our budget deliberations, and I put in different formulas, and I said, these are the outcomes and how they will change, how many people will get increases and how big they will be, right? And I put forward proposals to ameliorate that, and a couple of years ago to make sure it wouldn't happen. But they didn't pass. So we're here today. These increases happened. Some of them were mistakes, and we need to correct them, regardless of who made the mistake. And there was a commitment from the full council, I heard, to deal with this big increase that was caused by the removal of the cap. And we can quantify that. It's about 400 or 500 people who got a really substantial increase because of the lifting. And then there are thousands who got increases between, I don't have the chart in front of me, but this was on the council floor on yesterday.
Excuse me, we're just about the end of the show then. We need to drop the caller here, but I guess you can contact Mr. Bynum yourself. And so we've just got another minute left. So, Tim, if you want to say some closing remarks, tell people.
Yeah, I just want to say that I hope people have a sense that I do my homework, that I have a response to these complex questions, because I was the finance chair for 4 years. You know, I take that job seriously. I went to government finance officer school. I'm not kidding. running the county is a complex matter. And you've got a lot of good people that are working on it. But you also have a sharp disagreement about who should pay the bill. You know, I made arguments to lower taxes. I heard argument we couldn't raise the tipping fees for commercial because, you know, that hotel, we can't raise hotel rates, you know, property taxes because they employ people. And of course they employ people, but, you know, you have to find that balance. Who pays the bills?
Right. So if somebody wants to contact you or get some more information about your campaign, where would they go?
Oh, let me just say, there are a lot of really big issues happening on Kauai. I can't believe so many big ones all at once. And I'm trying to put position papers on timbynum.com. Please go to timbynum.com. I have a statement about taxes there that's more detailed.
You can email me that way through tim@timbynum.com or tbynum@kauai.gov. My phone number is 652-4575. I put that on the web. But I'm trying to put up position papers about these law violations I talked about the seed companies and the changes of land that have happened here, about taxes, about the lawsuits. I'm working on that one. That one's the hardest. This cavalcade of civil rights and personnel lawsuits, where we have really big ones we're dealing with right now, and that's been going on for years. Please go to timbynum.com if you want to learn more about these issues and what my perspective is. I try to base this on the public record. You know, decisions aren't made by what you say. They're shown by what you actually do. And we, all of the things we say at the council and all of the things we do are part of a very elaborate public record. And it gives me a lot of solace, because if I get it wrong, people can tell me, because I will.
Yeah.
You know, I've tried to give the best answers I could here. Probably some of them were wrong, but they were honest and straightforward, right. And I think that's what people on Kauai want.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Obviously, there's quite a bit of interest on the part of the callers here and listeners. They had a lot of